Welcome to the American Horror Story podcast, brought to you by Bald Mover, the officially unofficial podcast for FX's horror anthology, American Horror Show.
The horror anthology?
Horror anthology.
We agreed not to go with that title.
Well, there's a male horror. There's male prostitution in this.
I didn't say anything about males.
the Male Prostitution Horrorcast, Season 4, Freak Show. This is the first episode, the premiere, the extra long 90-minute episode. It's called Monsters Among Us.
They found out about us.
What'd you think of this episode?
I thought it was a very strong season opener.
Me too.
It was very good.
I don't know that they can keep the creepiness going this strong this long, because this thing felt like it was packed with 5 episodes worth of creepy shit.
I find myself saying that every season.
And frequently, towards the middle, it kind of peters out.
Do you think so?
I
think they just keep throwing stuff in there that doesn't really make sense, but you just, I don't know, it's like a train wreck. You can't look away.
I thought you and I were kind of agreeing on Coven. Nothing says Coven like a Coven in the oven. That around Christmas time, it started to fall off. But then they took a couple weeks off, and we kind of forgot about it, and then it came back.
But what is falling off for Coven? Just slightly less crazy than it was before?
Good question.
I don't know. I'm eager to see.
They sold me with the Borax enemas. I thought it was really great. A lot of things I was concerned about in the preseason coverage we did, such as Michael Chiklis's height and the...
Which we will address later.
The conjoined twins effects. I thought the conjoined twins effects were really...
Yeah.
More convincing than I saw on the preseason trailer stuff. So maybe they did tweak the effects a little bit, but...
Very nicely done. I think it's a good way to conserve effects.
Conserve FX?
FX budget by doing the split screen stuff, because it's also a really fun camera trick where you get to see the perspective of the twins.
Yeah, it's a nice little stylistic choice. So you said you have some upfront information.
Yes. Okay, it was this... episode was directed by Ryan Murphy. And if you don't know Ryan Murphy, then shame on you. I just read his Wikipedia and it's fascinating. But he is most known in conjunction with Brad Falchuk. And Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk wrote this episode together.
Right on.
But the two of them have created Nip Tuck, Glee, and all the American Horror Stories. Brad Falchuk... I don't know, hasn't really done much else, but Ryan Murphy has a very long list of things he's done, including he wrote the Broadway musical The Normal Heart,
the one that got adapted to HBO,
And he was born and grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana.
I saw that too.
Went to Warren Central High School right in our neighborhood.
Hometown.
And
a Hoosier boy made good.
Yeah, and he went to IU. I just thought that was so cool.
Sweet.
So I'm claiming you. I went to the same places that this man has.
And we've had the same degree of success.
Exactly.
I thought you went to Bon Toms. That's high school.
That was high school. I traveled a lot.
Before you made it to IU. Before you made it down to B-Town.
Yeah.
Shall we get right into the episode, or you have
I wanted to talk about some of the cast.
Oh, all right.
Some of the fun freaks. The freaks. This episode.
Get your binoculars out when you say it.
Yes, exactly like that. Jessica Lange is playing Elsa Mars.
Sure.
I guess her inspiration was sort of Marlene Dietrich.
She's playing Elsa Mars in Jupiter, Florida. I thought that was pretty cute.
Yeah, that is fun. The other person who has come back this season is Naomi Grossman, who plays Pepper. And I don't really know how to describe her character other than it's just a weird, like, toothy kind of... Just that one little ponytail and no other hair on the head.
Yeah.
The big nose.
She looks like a cartoon character from Popeye.
Yeah. She was also in Asylum, the second season.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this season is set 10 years before her character's arc on Asylum.
Ah.
And if you haven't seen it, I won't ruin it for you. The other freaks are Amazon Eve... played by Erica Irvin.
Played by Cecily.
Well, Erica Irvin actually is not that tall.
Really?
She's only 6'8".
Ah, gotcha.
Which is nothing compared to my 6'1". Also, there is Paul the Illustrated Seal.
Mm-hmm.
Played
He's
by...
the guy with the flipper, the skeletal flipper things.
Well, I'm sure he wouldn't appreciate you calling them that, but yes.
I bet that's exactly what he calls it.
Matt Fraser. And he's got a long list of things that he's done, too. He's a performer. And Ma Petite is played by, and I'm going to butcher this name, but Jyoti Amge,
mm-hmm.
the Indian actress. She is the world's smallest woman.
Yeah.
And she's 20 years old.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering how old she is.
Can't drink.
Really?
Well, I mean, she's only 20. I don't know
India. Oh. India, I'm pretty sure it's like 18 or 11,
when
I think.
When you're born. I think it's interesting because I bet a shot of whiskey would kill her.
Oh, my God. It would destroy her.
I mean, that would be like us drinking a gallon.
She's the cheapest date ever. All you have to do is feed her scraps off your own plate. Yeah.
I wonder what she – you know, because the thing is she feed, I read some interesting interviews where she says that she really hates being held like a baby or a child.
Really?
And yet – 90% of her screen time, she's being held like a baby or child. And I don't know. I wonder how she feels about that, or whether that was a commentary on the way people see little people. But she's extreme. Like, she's barely 2 foot tall.
I mean, honestly, most.
It's shocking to see a fully formed person that small.
Honestly, I think most of the unusual people hate it when people point out or treat them like they're unusual. But it's. It's inevitable. People stare at me all the time, and I'm 6'1". I can't even imagine looking like any of these people.
Right. No,
it's got to be tough to deal with, and you have to sort of take it with grace. And when people ask you to get paid a lot of money to be on screen, but you're going to be carried around, because it's probably also because you just can't shoot her standing next to anyone.
That's true.
Those shots don't work.
That's true.
So they have her.
She has to be up on a platform or standing on a table or something.
She runs across the table to talk to – yeah.
I found it very hard to understand her because it sounds like she's just inhaling helium all the time. But it's just her little bitty vocal cords.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's it. I just wanted to highlight those fun people.
Lots of other American Horror Story alumni as we go on.
Yeah, I don't need to reintroduce those people.
All right. So let's talk about this show. We start off on the conjoined twins. And I just want to highlight a lot of the camera tricks that you kind of already talked about. When they're showing Bette or Dot... Dot is the more glum one, and Bette is the more happy one, but also maybe simple.
I feel like she's got a touch of Asperger's.
She's like got a touch
her
of something.
Emotional range isn't really there.
But yeah, I don't know if it's Asperger's. I just think she might be...
Well, I mean, she responded to her mom telling her that she couldn't go to a movie and slapping her across the face by stabbing her.
Oh, yeah.
That's just...
But her mom was also kind of a bitch. A little bit of, you know, Carrie.
All right.
I'm not saying she deserved to be stabbed with scissors, but I'm also not ruling that out.
It wasn't scissors.
There will be because they
regular old bread knife.
They make a reference to the Alabama incident, which I'm kind of curious to see if we'll see more in the form of flashbacks. But I like the way when they're showing Bette or Dot and kind of giving us their mental, you know, their monologue, that they have this extreme angle where one of their heads is sticking off just off frame.
I bet
and
she.
It's very interesting because you don't see shots framed like that.
Yeah. I bet when she was finished filming this, that it was just hell on her neck. I mean, it was just hard for my neck just watching her do that.
Right.
In one way or the other, but maybe it balanced out. Do this shot one day, this shot the next day.
And it's only a couple lines at a time, I'm sure. But yeah, I don't envy her the kinks that she got on her neck.
Especially Bette. She had the more extreme. She's always got the more extreme neck angles.
So I think that we see the plot where the milkman came and he sees that the previous milk was untouched. He lets himself in. He sees the mother stabbed to death. This is some milkman because he takes it upon himself to get a rolling pin and investigate the source of the killer. Goes upstairs, opens a darkened room, screams, and we're led to believe that he found the twins because we next see them being wheeled into a gurney. As the title card says, that it's 1952 in Jupiter, Florida.
And it was a really nice touch to have their toes look different. Like,
yes.
Like, Bette keeps hers
manicured. Bette was all
pedicured
with red, pretty red toenail polish. And Dots was a disaster.
I'm surprised that Bette just didn't take it upon herself. Just when you're bored, maybe, just to do the other toes.
But I wonder, the way it seems is that each twin has control over that half of the body. So I wonder if Bette, like, played keep away or smacked her if she tried to do it or something like that.
I just don't understand why you got to be so hard all the time.
Yeah, well, it's hard life. as we find out. I thought it was interesting how like nurses and doctors are just vomiting in the hallways. Someone like that in real life would be jaw dropping, but it's not sickening. I don't quite understand the whole monstrous angle.
Well, if it's 1952.
Yeah.
It's very conservative sensibilities back then.
But on the other hand,
what's the weirdest thing you've seen rolling through an emergency room?
The weirdest an emergency room doctor has seen. I'm just saying that this was, you know, freaks were kind of a thing back then. And they were? I was kind of surprised. I thought that was a little over the top. We're introduced to a candy striper, which you pointed out is one of Meryl Streep's daughters.
Yep, Grace Gummer.
Grace Gummer.
Who's also in the newsroom, where you probably saw her first.
And about this time, Jessica Lange shows up as Elsa Mars, and she's lighting cigarettes. The rules do not apply to Elsa.
You know, when she first... Yeah,
and also, lucky don't. Strikes are good for you. God damn it.
Obviously, they're doctor approved. and they really were. Kid tested. Mom's approved. When I first saw this episode, I thought that Jessica Lange's makeup job was horrible. I was like, is she really getting that old that they can't even do a good makeup job on her anymore? Right. And then I realized that it was on purpose. She's a fading star who's just putting more and more makeup on to get her old self
back. She's 65.
Well, that's not really what she looks like.
She didn't look... And I think, don't you think they made her intentionally hotter last year?
Well, yeah.
When she was the whatever, her Fiona.
Oh, absolutely. And that's stretching it. But this, she's just got, you can see it. Your nails across it and get inches of makeup off her.
Sure, sure.
So it wasn't unintentional that they made her look so thirsty.
So she seduces this candy striper into with the life because she says, hey, you should come out and visit my curiosities or whatever it is. And she swaps uniforms with her. And then brings in the double balloons to the twins, which I thought was another neat, you know, visual thing. The double balloons looked like their heads.
Yeah, some fun foreshadowing before she entered the room.
Yeah.
Two different colors, too.
And we go to the opening sequence, which I am really enjoying. I think that the monkey, the cymbal-playing monkey with the red eyes and the sharp teeth is going to be my new stick figure demon spreading his wings. Like, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, Mustafa. I also am very impressed that FX got away with the giant penis leg woman with the curly pubic hair growing all around it.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I think there should be more dicks, asses, balls, and breasts in American
television. But God forbid they say the F word.
Or, yeah.
Anywhere in that.
Sure. I mean, I think there should be more sex, less violence, or at least equal time if we're going to be adults about it. I'm just impressed that a basic cable show got away with a fairly graphic, what would you call that? It's not paper mache. It's some kind of marionette.
Oh, clockwork. Like the stop motion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a horrifying version of the Game of Thrones introduction.
It actually reminded me a lot of The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. Stop motion.
Yeah. That's what I just said.
Oh. Let's move on. We find a couple things about the twins. Apparently, they can read each other's thoughts.
Yeah.
The shared spinal cord.
And Elsa was kind enough to stop by the house and get them a dress. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason she went there. It wasn't to look at all the curiosities.
Certainly. Also, even though we know that they have four separate lungs, Bet can smoke a cigarette and Dot can exhale. So there must be some kind of connection there somewhere.
Because of reasons, obviously. Because of
diaphragms and alveoli and
sometimes smoke goes through your stomach, right?
Esophagus, sure. Why not? Elsa points out that they have two hearts but only one vag. And oh, that must be a bitch.
hearts want different things.
Yeah.
For the vag.
For the vag. And she kind of talks about the sexual history, which we now see that Dot is kind of prudish, mm-hmm. a little sexually repressed, and Bette is all about. She wants to crank up the lever on the D and get more of it, or any of it, honestly.
Or as Dot would say, she's a dirty slut.
Surprised she didn't slap her there.
She can reach.
We then cut to a scene of lovebirds on a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
And they are gagging for it for each other. They're wanting to get it on. The one girl has stolen rubbers
mm-hmm.
from the dime store.
Mm-hmm.
And her boyfriend goes to the car to get something, which we never find out because he's interrupted by a creepy-ass clown.
I believe that the farm boy...
An ass clown.
was going to kill her first. That's what he went to the car to get.
What a twist.
I know.
The clown saver? He's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
And that the 8-year-old boy
is just misunderstood.
Being viciously abused by his parents.
They'll learn.
Yeah. This scene is pretty horrific. The only thing that kept me from being like really scared by it or really creeped out by it is because it was in broad daylight. But then when he was stabbing that dude with the scissors and the guy was still alive through it, oh my God. Like, wouldn't that be a bitch if you're like, man, I wish I'd just hurry up and die now.
Those are like hedge
clippers. I kind of want to die right now.
Well, I think after the first stab to the chest, you probably would.
I don't know.
So human bodies really work.
Really? You keep telling me.
They don't
that.
Take multiple impacts to the chest area.
This guy is the way he does his performance. And I was shocked to learn that this is the same actor that plays Norm, who's Margie's husband from Fargo.
Yeah.
It's very mild. The guy that paints ducks and woodland scenes and gets on a 2-cent stamp or whatever it is. That's the clown.
We all got to start somewhere.
And the way he does like the little clown flourishes when he's doing magic tricks and stuff, the juxtaposition of that versus just how savage he is and the mask and what the hell is going on with his scalp?
Yeah, it seems like he cut off his somehow lost his own scalp and replaced it with someone else's.
Mm.
Like another clown scalp that already had the haircut. That's why there's little wisps of hair.
Is he the axe murderer of this season? We're just going to get bits of his backstory dribbled out. Has he got any connection to Elsa, do you think?
I honestly can't speculate on that.
All right. Well, you could. He's refused to. That's duly noted. And we will move on. Speaking of Elsa Marr, she's at a diner, the 50th era diner you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a lot of weird things because anytime they show conventional American, like Americana life, it's all through a weird fisheye lens.
Yeah.
And everyone's like,
it's like everything's foggy because there's so much cigarette smoke in the air at that time.
but everyone's like doing things in synchronized motion, like in, you know, and everything's kind of gray and washed out versus the freaks. When you go to the freaks and their circus, everything's colorful and everyone's an individual. I mean, I think that's obviously stylistic choice to have the fisheye bizarro lens on the normal people and then, you know, much more colorful, expressive lens when you're with at the freak show.
I'm being curious to go back in the 50s and see what that was really like.
The ever-present smoke.
Yeah.
Can you imagine flying?
What?
Flying.
Oh, like in an airplane with people smoking on the airplane?
Yeah, like when more than 50% of people are smoking in a metal tube that's being recirculated. It must have been hell.
It is hell.
It is hell. Yeah, flying is already hell, let alone that. At least you had more leg room. So. Yeah.
Did you?
I think so.
Or were you just naturally evolutionarily shorter?
Because of all the constant inhaling of the cigarette smoke.
Yes, your leg growth was stunted. And all the coffee and the whiskey.
Elsa's sitting there in the diner. She's cutting out negative movie reviews from the newspaper because apparently she's keeping track of when famous, talented people are slighted by critics so it can build up her self-esteem somehow.
Yeah. She's the ultimate. Wait, did you just describe your own job?
I've never cut out 1-star reviews from iTunes. What are you talking about?
About yourself.
Yeah. We're introduced to Jimmy Darling, who
is charming the skirts off the waitress.
Yeah, he's got the Indiana Jones Jr. look, except for he's got giant welder's mitts on. And he is. He's trying to charm the skirt or the apron off of this diner waitress successfully until Elsa notices him and, you know, comes over there and completely blocks him. Cock blobs him. He's probably got a blobby cock. Let's be honest.
He's got the hands. What's he need a cock blob for?
Truly. He's got the magic fingers. But she asks him to light the lighter, which obviously he can't with the mitts, and he doesn't want to take them off because his hands are freaky. And he's like, you know, fuck off. This I know that we've been kicked off of our plot, our circus plot, and this thing's all screwed up. We have a flashback to her talking to the guy who owns the field that she's squatting in.
Yeah.
And he's leased that to her for a year, but he's kicking her out because there's a reverend in town at the tent revival who can pay in cash, and she ain't selling shit.
And I was really hoping the reverend would show up because I was thinking maybe like a True Detective crossover would happen.
Ooh.
Yeah, right?
Get maybe Eli Thompson in there.
This is where the King in Yellow starts.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can rule out the reverend. he's introduced, he might come back, and there might be some allusions to how freaky
they always some of that come stuff back, don't be. They?
They always come back. But she tends to buy the guy off.
She plies him with smelly underwear and peach schnapps.
He says he wants $100 to stay for a month, and she can offer him one fuck. The buck to fuck ratio. And buck apparently he accepts. And he says it's over. She says it's not over. The waitress comes to cash out her check, and she says, "Don't you know it's on the house, darling? Stars never pay." As the music swells, and it's pretty awesome. Again, she smokes where she wants, and she doesn't pay. We're going to try that the next time we dash and dine.
I try that every time we go out to dinner, and it always works on you. Okay, so we're at a fancy dinner spread, and I had no idea. I thought this was maybe one of the true romance parties or the sex toy parties that women do nowadays. Pampered Chef.
Because they had those in the 50s.
Whatever. I'm sure repression. They did. Just called something different. Anyway, it's a Tupperware party, judging from the sheer amount of Tupperware on the tables.
You could do some freaky stuff with Tupperware. They used to have Absolutely. These like popsicle makers, popsicle molds. I'm sure you could do
some.
Can I
see that? Popsicle molds?
You can do some
okay.
some sex toys with the popsicle molds.
So anyway, it's a Tupperware party with sextras. And Jimmy Darling is giving out side hand jobs for only $18.
I think that's total. That was his total take.
Yeah. For only $18?
For, yeah, to work a whole party.
How much is that the equivalent of today? I'm going to find out while you talk about this scene.
So what I don't get about Jimmy is, like, to me, I think they implied that he had the two in the pink, two in the stink going.
No. I told you that was wrong.
Why?
It's still wrong.
Why? He's
because people, not that many people do butt stuff.
Well, first of all, if 50s-era housewives are having sex parties, they're for sure doing butt stuff, number one. Number two, and I don't think that he's got weird. The dexterity to go from the Spock to pull that down and do the pistol move.
I think they can spread far enough. They're pretty long.
I think I'm just saying that if that's the thing, there's nothing he can do that an average man can't do just doing to live long and prosper.
Okay, so I think that's ridiculous.
Okay.
You know it's ridiculous
well,
and not
true.
You're
the one with the woman bits, not me.
You just want there to be even more weird stuff in your weird stuff.
I don't know. I just don't get what the fuss. So what do you think the fuss is?
I think his fingers are just long, and if you looked closely, the tips of the digits were kind of like turned out a little bit. So
the
it had like
ones,
weird.
The one that we're going into stink, sure. Which is even kind of weirder.
What? I'm actually done talking about this.
Did you find out what you're looking for?
No, because I was so distracted by the
by making,
horror.
It's a horror.
The sheer horror of the what you're implying. Horror. I mean, why would you think that could possibly be a thing?
I don't. I'm not Ryan Murphy. This is the man that did.
No, why would you think that could possibly be a thing?
I don't know. I was very confused. I'm a babe in the woods over here.
Anyway,
let's move on to a robbery gone bad. This is the stories that the twins are trying to tell Elsa about how their mom died, and they can't get their story straight about who was there and how the mom got murdered. And Elsa says, "You need to get your story straight before the cops come to talk to you." This is interspersed with flashbacks of the murderous clown killing just tons of people. We see him kill a woman, a man. We see him abduct an 8-year-old boy. Pretty horrifying. And next scene, we see a creepy-ass school bus in the woods where we find a girl from the lover's picnic is imprisoned in the back of this school bus with the 8-year-old boy. She's trying to give him some words of encouragement that your parents are going to come, and he's not having any of it. He's like, "Nah, I'm pretty sure the clown killed my parents' lady." The clown comes back, does a little bit of routine.
Yeah, he's doing his creepy tricks. I think that in his mind, he's genuinely entertaining people.
Yeah.
I think that he wanted to entertain that little blonde girl until the boyfriend showed up and he had to attack them both.
Because he was being a dick and he wants to entertain the child.
Exactly. So he still sees the child and the little blonde girl as being innocent. So I don't think he intentionally wants to kill them, but if they upset him by being scared by his balloon popping, then I could see them dying in a weird way.
Yeah, I know he flew into the rage when the balloon was popped, and I wasn't sure if it was because his routine got disrupted or because they were afraid, because they were afraid at other points when he pulled the...
I think it was the culmination of both things. The balloon popping, and he couldn't, like, smoothly transition. Also, they were terrified by it. They're just terrified, but...
But when he pulled that long hanky with the noisemaker at the end, he really made them both terrified with that. And then he smoothly transitioned to balloon animals. So it's almost like the failure of his act is what set him off.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm very curious about this dude. We see that Dot and Bette have flew the coop, and they're returning home, and they're trying to pack underwear. Bette is trying to pack some slutty underwear when Elsa catches them and says, you guys are both going to get a one-way trip to Old Sparky, which is the Florida electric chair, and you're going to die together unless they separate you both, which is a kind of a horrifying concept to everyone.
It seemed like an anomaly to the doctors. I can't even imagine why they would think about separating them.
I think she's just trying to pour some emotional gas on the old emotional fire.
Oh, yeah.
To make the stakes even higher, which triggers another flashback of Bette wanting to go see Singing in the Rain, their hard-ass mom saying, no, you can't. Don't you remember what happened to Alabama? And I'm like, what happened in Alabama? I don't remember. And she stubbornly gets dies from a butter knife, as you point out.
In glorious Technicolor,
before I find out what happened in Alabama. Point of fact.
What happened in Alabama? I think I missed it.
No, we don't know.
Oh.
She said that something happened. Something always happens in Alabama. Alabama was the Florida of the 50s. Let's be real.
Something
here.
Is always happening in the South. I'll tell you that much.
And it's not just songs. Point of fact, Singing the Rain is worth killing someone to see.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can rent it. You can see it on DVD or Blu-ray, so there's no need. But mm-hmm. I'm saying if you're crazy, maybe religious fundamentalist, browbeating, not very sensitive to your deformity mother is preventing you from seeing it, maybe a killer.
Yeah, I'll justify it. Let them stand up in a court of law.
If I was on a jury, they wouldn't be convicted.
They should just give themselves up.
So then
we find out that Dot stabbed Bette with scissors in the chest?
After the mother was stabbed.
I don't know.
Elsa, amateur psychologist, that wasn't because of her sin, but yours. And almost implying that maybe it was Dot that took control of her sister's arm in a moment of emotional distress to start the stabbing. That's what I got from that.
She was awake.
No, yeah,
she was standing right there. I thought for a second that maybe it was a dream and she...
No, but she has a bandage on her chest. You're talking about the secondary stabbing?
Yeah, the secondary stabbing. I thought maybe the first time I saw the episode that the scissors were on the nightstand, and while she was asleep, like kind of like sleepwalking, she just motor.
No, she tried to stab her, and we found out from the police that stab wound would happen days after the mother was killed already. So they had been sleeping in a house with the mother dead on the floor for days trying to figure out what the hell to do, apparently. Hmm. And also that milk was curdled. That wasn't just like over there overnight. It was really, of course, it is Florida.
Yeah, he probably comes by like every week. It's three jugs of milk. How much milk do you drink?
I don't know.
I don't drink milk
ever.
Three
growing women. Well, two growing women and one.
I couldn't tell you the last time I consumed milk ever.
I'm a milk fan. You are not. So anyway, let's go on to the fact that the twins.
But pumpkin spice creamer, I'll drink that all day.
In your Uggs. So Elsa wants to save them. She says, you know, you guys can't stand up to the cops. Come with me to my Carnival of Delights. We find out that Dot and Bette keep separate diaries, even though they can read each other's thoughts. And they have wildly different takes on this. Bette says that...
Why does one keep a diary?
I don't know. I've tried on several, multiple occasions to keep a diary,
so
or as a guy would call it, a journal.
You know what?
And I can't keep it going for more than a month.
I kept a diary once when I was a kid because I had a lot of feelings I needed to get out. My mom read it and then confronted me about it.
No, that's not cool.
So I never kept a diary again, and I'm not quite sure why.
That's not cool. Also, hi, Cecily's mom.
oh, I know she's listening. She knows what she's done.
She knows. You're going to stab her with scissors next time? This is a cautionary tale.
No, I'm going to stab her with a bread knife.
See, you're right. Unless you dress up like a clown, then it would be thematically appropriate to use the scissors.
You know what? I'll think of something new and inventive to kill my mom with. Anyway.
Dot and Bette have wildly different viewpoints of where their life is at now. Bet is all, my future's never looked brighter as she's walking through.
It's all silky and pink.
Pink and wrapped in silk as she's walking through the devil's mouth, which is the entryway to... It's also embroidered on Miss Fräulein Mars's purse.
Yeah, I want that bag. Pretty cool. I tried to Google it, and it's probably not going to be made until the end of the
season. Give it a week on Etsy, and it'll be...
I'm there. I'm so there.
Get that. It'll be on
If anyone is making or selling these things, I'm there.
Unless... so, yeah.
Please send it to me. And but Elsa has an amazing tent.
Yes, she does.
Dressing room.
I think she could finance the freak show for a year if she just sold whatever is the contents. That crystal chandelier alone.
No, these are antiques. Mm. She goes antiquing.
So anyway, that's Bette's opinion. Dot is saying her soul has plumbed new depths of despair. And we meet some of the freaks, and like we see Meep the Geek, who quite convincingly bites the head off of a chicken. And did you notice the chicken was still like moving and flopping?
Yeah, I did.
In that scene. And Jimmy steps up to...
gross. I think that's what grossed me out the most about this episode, was seeing him do that.
The geeking? That's still a thing. Did you know that like freak shows have made a... Of course you do, because when we were in Austin... We had a surprise freak show. We went to this Museum of Curiosities in downtown Austin, and this dude who clearly worked there, like, you know, the way you and I, we don't really like people, number one.
We do not.
Except for the people listening to this podcast, you're cool. You're our friends. But we like to go through the museums like this, and we're just, like, making jokes, and we're making up alternate histories for all the artifacts, and we're talking about how cheesy it all is. And this guy's really harshing our vibe, and he's telling a bunch of ridiculous shit that is obviously a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, he's like, take a picture in this glass, there'll be a ghost that appears.
Yeah, and this skeleton was a little girl who went through a torture mystery. And then I'm like, man, and he's saying it in all this ridiculous carnival barker voice.
Yeah.
At the end, we find out that he is a freak show entertainer.
We were also the only clients of the day, so that's why he was following us.
Super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so he's going to put on a show, and I'm like, oh, Christ. It was awesome. Honestly, awesome. He was a sword swallower.
It was too awesome. It was scary. He put like a nail down his nose.
Yeah, he did the blockhead routine. He swallowed several swords. I guess there's not very many sword swallowers, like less than 200 in the world, and he's one of them. I think he blew fire.
No, he didn't.
He didn't?
No, but that would have been cool.
In my mind, he blew fire.
He blew fire out of your brain.
But he did a bunch of different stuff, and he's actually really funny in that routine. I wish he just shut the fuck up during the museum part. Anyway, what I'm saying is the freak show stuff has kind of made a resurgence, and I think they still do geeks, which I don't understand how...
Geeks?
Geek is the term for biting a living animal's head off.
Oh.
And or that's a term for the person that does it.
Oh, is that why they call zombies geeks in The Walking Dead?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. I have no idea why they call...
thought that was just some hipster bullshit.
No, I have no idea why they call, you know, nerds geeks, but... whatever.
So, well.
But I just wonder how they get away with doing that, because you'd think the animal rights people would be all over. Like, PETA would be...
No, it was obviously a fake chicken.
I know that, but I'm saying real-life freak shows do have geeks.
Oh, still do that shit?
I think so.
I don't think that's...
We'll have to do some research. We'll be back next week to talk about it, but I just wonder how they get away. Or maybe it's all elaborate fakery. I mean, didn't Ozzy Osbourne famously bite bat heads off in concerts, or was that a bunch of Baptist... Pentecostal bullshit about rock and roll heavy metal?
No, he definitely did that.
Okay. Citation needed. We'll get all this straightened out next week.
I definitely heard that he did that.
Oh, no,
once.
I heard it. I'm just saying, also Dungeons & Dragons can make you commit suicide. So, you know, take everything with a large grain of salt.
That's a fact.
Jimmy comes up to save her from Meep the Geek, and Bette and Dot both are sweet on him. There's a love triangle that Apex meets in Bette and Dot's vagina. I don't see how they're going to resolve it.
I didn't see Bette being that attracted to him.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I think it was more like a Dot.
Oh, Bette. Okay, Bette. I always think Bette is a serious one.
Dot warmed up quite a bit to him. I think Bette is just looking for adventure.
Yeah, Bette's just a flirt. He's a cute boy, and she was batting her eyelashes, but
Dot is going to warm this one up. Oh, maybe that's how it's going to go this season. There's going to be sort of like a rivalry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, Bette's obviously the better flirt, but Dot has never done this before, but she really likes him, and they're going to fuck, but which one is he going to be fucking?
Yeah.
Hmm? Ever think about that?
Whose heart is he going to be fucking? I feel like this is going to culminate.
It's going to culminate, all
right. Head, right? And we're going to probably
Yeah, they've already tried to kill or Dot's already tried to kill Bez, so.
But I think that one of, like, what they're going to be, at some point in the season, I predict you're going to have a dead head of one of them lolling or gagging around on the side of the body, and if that's going to be a part of the creepy horror as well. Oh, yeah.
That's a given.
Kind of human centipede style.
What? How is that?
You know, because she gets stuck in the middle between two dead people.
Oh, right. They did die.
That's kind of like, you know, that's always would be like if you're conjoined twin and the other half dies and you're still attached, what the hell happens then? Anyway, you know what happens now? Kathy Bates strolls into the room with her badass bearded self, introduces herself as Ethel the Henchwoman.
And her unbadass accent. What the hell is going on with her mouth stuff?
Let's just save all that for the feedback, because 95.7% of the feedback is asking what the fuck is going on with Kathy Bates' accent.
Well, I don't think there's much left to be said, but...
Her backstory is she is a drunk, and she was saved from the bottle by Miss Elsa, and she feels very loyal to her for that reason. And we find out a little bit later that Jimmy, who is also known as the Lobster Boy with his magic fingers, is her son.
Hmm.
I don't know that a beard growing on a woman is actually a deformity, so I don't understand why she would be more prone to give birth to.
I think she probably would have shaped it. I mean, with the way that women in the 50s were consumed by their looks and the way they appeared to men, I just feel like she would have shaved it. I mean, did you see how nicely she was dressed? She seemed like a woman who actually... put a lot of stock into her appearance.
I don't know.
When she found her in the drunk tank is what I'm talking about.
No, certainly. She actually had a fuller beard then too, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, she's gotten older. I mean, so then it was, and Elsa looked really young too. So that was like 20 years ago. You would have shaved it. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Your choice is to hide your deformity from people or blend in.
Clearly, I don't mind put my deformity front and center.
Yeah,
so
you're a freak, and that's acceptable in 2014. That is as far as we've come.
People
have gotten stupider and prouder of it.
We see Paul the Illustrated Seal and the... What do they call the tallest... What do they call the woman?
Amazon Eve.
Amazon Eve and Jimmy are out hanging a sign for the new attraction, and Jimmy and Paul are both like, I don't know about, you know, hanging up a wanted poster... Your criminal's here on the outskirts of her thing, but everybody's like, well, we'll trust Miss Elsa about it. Some locals come by, tear assing up the road, throw a bunch of empty glass bottles at the feet of the freaks, and call them freaks. And I probably shouldn't be calling them freaks. It's probably insensitive.
But I mean, Jimmy, it's called the Freak Show.
I get it.
You can't be offended by calling yourself something.
And Jimmy loses his shit about it and has to be restrained by Paul. That's pretty much the scene.
And scene.
We go back to the inside of Elsa's main tent where the candy striper comes in, makeup running, and says, I want to go home to my family and my church. And Miss Elsa, Jedi mind tricks her and says, you liked it here. Don't scratch that. You loved it here. And then she runs what can only be called a freak porno on 8mm that stars the candy striper.
How do you feel about Elsa Mars drugging and being a part of the rape of this young woman?
Well... It's, I don't know. It is a very uncomfortable scene because at the end, the one woman says, she even says, I did like it.
Yeah, because she's watching herself enjoying it on the screen, but she doesn't remember that. She was drunk.
You don't think so? Because she came in.
That's like telling a woman who got drunk and had sex that she doesn't remember that she was asking for it. Or she's wearing a short skirt, so she's asking to be raped.
It depends on what part of the party she started smoking opium. I think you're probably right,
though. I'm pretty sure the part of the party where she started smoking opium is when Elsa handed her a drugged Lucky Strike in the hospital.
Oh, that was a drugged Lucky Strike for real?
Yes, that's how she got it. That's how she got her candy striper uniform.
Oh, see, I thought she just talked her out of it.
No, she drugged her.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yes, that's clearly problematic.
It's horrible.
What is?
I couldn't believe they're going to take this semi-sympathetic character and make her a rapist.
Yeah, Elsa, I don't know that she's semi-sympathetic. She, I think Phil Z said that this is like the classic villain monologue when she goes, no, your small townsfolk are the depraved monsters, the ones outside these tent, housewives pinched with bitterness, watching their soaps and stuffed with boredom, dreaming of the strange erotic pleasures that we have visited upon you, my dear. I think she seems like she's kind of villainous. Not in the way that the smiling clown is, but still.
I feel like she's villainous in the way that she's very self-serving.
So this is the thing.
She brings in these Siamese twins because she wants to make them. Or no, she says that she wants to save them, but she's only bringing them in because she wants to make herself a star.
Oh, she's exploiting
That's a
them.
Kind of self-serving villainy.
Certainly.
You'd kill a cop to protect these stars, to protect your own circus.
But we also see that these freaks that people are afraid of and say they're monsters, they do monstrous things. And I think the show's questioning whether they're justified in, like, you know, we've lived by these society's rules. Now we're making our own. Gobble, gobble, one of us. But I have a problem with that because, like, in True Blood, the whole conceit of this is it's kind of a parable for gay rights. And, like, you know, these people are feared and, you know, you can't love them and they're poorly misunderstood and they make wild, outlandish stories. But then as the series goes on, the vampires really are monsters. Even the ones we like are fucking predators that will just as soon drink your blood and kill you as look at you.
You know what? Honestly,
that's problematic when you're saying they're a parable for gay rights, right?
Right. I don't think this show is doing that at all.
Well, no. It's asking us to sympathize with the freaks and feel sorry when people are saying that they're monsters, but then they're showing us
this cop came in here because he thought we were guilty before he even saw us. Well, you were guilty.
Yes, you
absolutely were.
Yes, these two girls did kill their mother by their own confession.
Yeah.
So it's like, how am I supposed to feel about this?
You drugged and raped a girl who's being held in some other tent somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're guilty.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think the show absolutely is doing
Maybe
that.
Maybe it's trying to say that the world made them bad people and they didn't really have a choice. They had to adapt to their surroundings.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see.
I'm saying that's the reason for their choices now, but
it'll be interesting to see how this develops as we go on. So we find out
Ma
Petite comes in and says, "A chauffeur in a big car brought out the house." No, don't do that.
Mm-mm.
All right.
She says that the show was bought out by one family whose names are Dandy Mott and Gloria Mott.
It's not
explicitly said, but I just wanted to, yeah.
So they're all excited about that. Jimmy and Ethel, who, of course, is the bearded lady and the lobster boy, and who are also mother and son, he says he got 18 bucks for the hand jobs, but he wants out.
Ah, I figured it out.
What?
That is the equivalent of $161 today. Still crazy low. I mean, how much I would charge for one hand job from you, maybe.
Well, I'm always flat fucking broke. So it's above like a streetwalker, but definitely below a, you know, high class call girl. It's kind of middle of the road.
Call boy.
Yeah, and especially males, they're not worth it. They don't get paid as much anyway. So
plus he was enjoying it. So
it's the one industry where sexual pay, the dimorphism is flipped onto its ass.
He did say that he didn't charge as much because some of them enjoyed it too much or something like that.
They got
that.
Off so fast he felt sorry. It's like, you know, when you go into mechanic and he's like, "That'll be a $50 diagnostic fee," and it turns out you just have a spark plug loose. He's like, I don't know. And then he charges you $50 anyway.
Yeah, I've never met a mechanic that didn't overcharge. That didn't say, "Well, the spark plug was loose, but also your hydraulic converters."
Yeah, and your flux capacitor need some more dilithium crystals.
Catalytic converter, that's the word I was looking for. There's a tiny little unicorn in your tailpipe.
This is Car Talk with Cecily and Aaron. So she says, but he complains, like, you know, all these people are drunk. And she's like, "Well, they're carnies. What are you going to do?" Which, that's not even a joke. That's literally what she said. He says, "Yeah, but, you know, there's programs now. They got the 12 steps and we can do this. We could get a tract of farm or land. We could all farm." And she's like, "What are you talking about? We're not normal. There is no normal. If you want to be useful, go make the twins feel at home."
And not with your lobster hands.
Because why couldn't the freaks all go buy a plot of land in the middle of nowhere and live out the rest of their days in happiness and peace and acceptance?
Because
that would be a boring television show?
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be a hell of a reality series, though. He goes to...
It actually is a reality series on AMC.
Is it?
Yes. You didn't know that? Not. Yeah, it absolutely is.
You're thinking Small Town Security. That's not a freak... It should be a freak show, but it isn't. So he says he goes to make Dot and Bette feel at home, but he finds that a cop is there cuffing them to arrest them because they're monsters.
It's called Freak Show on AMC.
No shit. Yeah. Oh, that's right. It is. That's a new one for this year.
It's been on for a while.
Okay, well, fuck me. he whistles up the rest of the freaks, and they all kind of appear in the tent.
Yeah, I'm surprised they were all ready, because he was leaving his trailer in a huff. Like, no one expected him to leave his trailer that night, and he just happened by that one to hear that.
They have superhuman hearing. It's part of their genetic, one of their gifts.
That's freakiest.
So he whistles him up, and the cop thinks he's got the upper hand because he's got a gun, because none of these carnies probably carry guns, unlicensed firearms, no way. And he continues to call them monsters and freaks, and Jimmy says, don't do that, and he slashes his neck with a straight razor somehow. I guess he's within the 15-foot rule, so before the guy can get the gun
clear. I'm telling you, it's those extra long lobster fingers. Get you slicing range.
Slice and dice, yeah. And pleasure. They're multifunction. They're like a, what do you call that, the slap chop?
A Swiss Army knife.
Swiss Army hand. So the rich dude, the dandy.
Dandy Mott and Gloria Mott.
The dandy and Gloria show up, and they bought the place out. And they get the best seat in the house. And then he insisted his mother give trade seats because he's that kind of guy. Now she mentions, because he starts to get upset because his show's running late. And she goes, now, settle down. We don't want that nasty rash to come back. I have another prediction.
What's your prediction?
He's going to get this obscene skin infection and end up being a part of the freak show.
Nah.
They're setting up this terrible rash.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think
they're also really good at setting things up to lead you down a different path and then just sharply veer left.
All right. Well, that's my official prediction. I love, and so then the freak show starts and it's fucking awesome.
Freaks.
We got
I just love that.
we got Kathy Bates, she's the announcer, she's the MC, she's a ringleader, if you will. And the seal guy does his little arm flap, which is really cool. And we see kind of pan over to the conjoined twins, and we see what'd you say to the little girl, Tiny Ma?
Ma Petite,
and
Amazon Eve together is a fun pair.
It is extremes of human condition. And then did you see on Wikipedia on Ma Petite's page? That's not her real name, Miss Imga. That she has got a photograph of her standing next to the world's tiniest man.
Yeah,
and he's like 65, so he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
What, he's an old guy, you mean?
I mean, compared to her, he's kind of a big guy.
Yeah, he towers like 3 inches over her. But no, I mean, at that scale. Like,
yeah, sure, she's sure. Just, yeah, she's a very tiny person. He's just like dwarf size.
He's smaller than dwarf.
No, he is, but he's got like fully formed.
Have you seen the remake of The Island of Dr. Moreau with Val Kilmer and The Godfather?
Yeah.
Marlon Brando,
yeah.
At the time, that was the world's smallest man. I thought
Marlon Brando?
No. Not by any stretch of imagination. But he had one of his supposedly genetically engineered creatures that sat on his piano, and he was in the movie, but he was a lot like Petite Ma. Similar statue.
Ma
he must
Petite.
Have died. Ma Petite.
Yes.
I'm never going to get that right.
No, I know.
But this show is awesome, and Kathy Bates is like, it's Waharo, yes, Haro, your souls. And then Elsa Mars gets introduced. She starts singing. I'm like, I don't really want to see Jessica Lange sing.
And I don't think this is a spoiler for next episodes, because if you've seen the preview, you see it's coming. But it seems like there's going to be a lot of singing this season.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Murphy's going back to his Glee roots, right?
He's good at it. I'll give him that.
For a season or two. And we only have one for this freak show.
And this is going to be the last one with Jessica Lange.
Really?
Reportedly. I mean, she might feel up to it next season, but okay. I don't know.
I'm saying I wasn't really wanting to see Jessica Lange sing when I could be seeing all these other interesting things. And then she started singing David Bowie's Life on Mars, and I completely was in love with it. That song fits this theme so well, especially since the freaks had set up this concern about, you know, nobody's coming to see this anymore because you got Lucille Ball and you got movies, and why would you come see us when you can see these fantastic things? And this is David Bowie singing about a woman seeing these movies and being kind of jaded about it and not caring. And I just thought it was awesome. And she's dressed like David Bowie.
Yeah, she's got the same the video. Eye makeup.
She gets the same eye makeup. The only thing that's different is the tie.
I kind of liked her version better.
It ties the whole show and episode together in such a great way. And there's just everything. You can see, like, they've got a band of little people playing this full orchestra, and the rest of the freaks are making, like, these waves go back and forth, and there's confetti and fog, and it's just freaking awesome. Interspersed with all this is a
freaking awesome.
is a weird image of Elsa in, like, a skull cap wearing this bizarre, like, French existentialism film makeup, and Jimmy's looking shocked, and I don't understand if that was a flashback or
they weren't directly next to each other. So I believe that Elsa is remembering her glory days, or maybe some sort of dark secret from her past. They're sure they're setting that up. And I think that Jimmy is looking down because he's operating whatever he's operating backstage. I think he's just looking down and sort of in shock and horror that he just murdered a man.
Sure.
But he's feeling, I think he's also feeling very proud of what he did it for.
I just saw that he's almost like almost disassociated, and I thought it was interesting. And I just didn't understand the Elsa Mars flash, and I wasn't sure if I was supposed to. So anyway, at the end, the dandy comes up with his mom.
The dandy?
Yeah, his name's Dandy, and he's a dandy.
Why are you calling him the dandy, though?
A dandy is a term for a guy like him.
Sure, but why are you calling him the?
He's a dandy. He's the only
dandy. Just call him Dandy.
Dandy.
Okay.
Dandy pops up with his mother and wants to know, because he's taken with Bette and Dot, and he wants to know how much for them to buy, like a curiosity, and they offer as much as $15,000.
You know what? He said that he offered to him behind or backstage. He got up and left pre-show and met them backstage, and he said how much.
Yeah.
And then we smash cut to where they're negotiating in front. What do you think that Bette and Dot's response was backstage? Let's talk to Elsa and see what she can work out.
No, I think they said no, and then he thought, well, I'll just go up the chain of command.
Mom.
That's how my life works.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, because clearly when Elsa asked for them, they said, we want to stay here. This is our home. Even Dot seemed down with that plan. In fact, Dot might be the one that said it. I can't recall.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy was there to protect her.
Defend her.
I'm sorry, not protect. She can protect herself, obviously.
One thing I skipped over, damn it, is Elsa at the end of her David Bowie solo.
Oh.
Just looks destroyed. And just before the lights shut off, she looks like she's about to have a panic attack.
Yeah.
What the hell was that about?
I imagine that while she was singing, I mean, she's a true performer. She puts her heart and her soul into it.
Mm-hmm.
So while she was performing that song and dance, she's completely lost herself.
Mm.
When the lights came down, the song was over. There was no standing ovation for her. She looks around and there's two people in the audience, and she's just, I think she knows that her career is over. She doesn't have a chance of becoming a Marlene Dietrich or a Betty Grable. And this is her last stop.
So that makes a nice seg, because the
segue.
The mother of the dandy says, when she won't sell her the twins, says, well, the worst part about the show is your pathetic attempt at singing, which completely blows up Elsa Mars. And I got to say that the carnival looks really amazing at night.
Oh, yeah. Did you notice that was the exact same daytime shot?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But now it's all lit up, and it just looks, because it kind of looks sad and depressing during the day, but at night it looks like a magical town. I mean,
It's like the
town. It's a thesaurus out. It looks like some magical kingdom or some fantasy land.
Yeah, the town itself has come to life at night, and it's just breathing and it's moving all on its own. It's incredible.
So Jimmy gets Amazon Eve to carry the cop's body over her shoulder like so many sacks of potatoes, and she flops him over onto a
stump. You skipped over the part where the clown was sitting on the merry-go-round.
I didn't notice that.
You didn't notice that?
I know he comes around at the end of this scene, but I did not know that.
Yeah, it shows the big shot of the scene, or of the that pan out of the whole carnival.
Right.
And then it zooms in on like the Ferris wheel and on this and this, and then you see the merry-go-round. It moves around, and the clown's just sitting there on one of the cars. coming around towards you.
Oh, shit. I must have been taking notes from...
He was so still and so creepy that he just blended in with the merry-go-round.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Jimmy's giving this... he gives a speech over this cop's body. It's on a stump, and he says, you know, people have been holding us down all our life and saying that we're wrong and we're freaks. Well, we should make our own right and wrong. And if they mess with any of us... And he points to Bet and Dot and says, and you're one of us now.
You're two of us now.
And by sheer force of will, they don't do a one of us montage. And then they all communally stab this cop's body.
Yeah, they start hacking him up with all their sharp things. And then they zoom out and the clown's there.
I did catch that.
And the clown's like, thinking, these people are fucked up.
Whoa. What are we, desecrating corpses now? I actually thought that maybe he was like, oh, this is my kind of party. But it's hard to tell with that giant creepy-ass smile plastered permanently to his face.
It is. You can't
tell that he's crying on the inside.
I don't want to.
It's so sad.
I'm good. I'm good on his emotions.
We return back into Elsa's tent, and she's deep inside an opium bowl. Ethel comes in to comfort her in her black mood, and she says, you know, I'm not really doing this for you people. I'm doing it so I can be a star. And Ethel says, you've got a gift. You deserve all the laurels and applause. But then when Elsa goes back to her opium bowl... And she's dismissed. Kathy Bates' face just turns dead. Like, I don't think she liked hearing Elsa say that.
Yeah.
And that might be trouble for Elsa.
I've got an idea about what that's all about.
Hit me.
But it's kind of informed.
Oh, well then don't hit me.
Okay.
We'll just see if you're right. You can call it. When it comes true, you can say, I called it.
I mean, this is like talks before the season even started.
Yeah. Well, do you want to have a spoiler section at the end of the cast?
That's all I've got to say.
Okay. Well, then I'll let you feel smug about it.
I don't want to feel smug about it. I want to talk about it. I'll tell you after this.
Okay. So Elsa then, after she dismisses Ethel, she takes her legs off. Literally, she's got her legs...
Wait, is that a metaphor for something? I don't know. Do people say that?
She's taking a load off. She's taking her legs off. And her dog's been barking. She's taking them off. And to a recording of Auf Wiedersehen,
Sweetheart. Auf Wiedersehen?
Whatever. that's the episode.
You know what? I don't think that I have the... No, I know for a fact that I don't have the patience to dress and undress so elaborately. Like, after a show, after that big performance, I don't think I could go back to my big tent. Fluffy tent, put on stockings, put on silky undergarments, put on my feathery night robe, and take down my hair, and lay there and smoke opium. I think I would just take everything off, take my legs off, and just lay there and get high.
To be fair, she didn't take her David Bowie makeup off, so she kind of half-assed it.
Well, nah. All right, I guess you're right.
Do you have anything else to talk about the episode before we get to feedback?
Nope.
But first, let's attempt to pay the bills. If you like what we're doing here on baldmove.com, we'd really appreciate your support, and there's tons of different ways you can do so. Number one, this is a new cast for us, so we'd really appreciate, if you enjoy it, to go to our iTunes feed and rate and review us if you use that piece of software, because that's probably the biggest thing you can do to help us kind of get the word out about the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if you'd like to directly support us, you can use our amazon.baldmove.com link. And that way, everything you buy on Amazon, when you use that link for that session, we get a tiny cut of Amazon's profit, and that helps us out a lot.
Or you can come up to us and stuff money in our clothes.
You can do that. We also... you can be doing that for us at the Walker Stalker Gone in Atlanta, Georgia.
Next weekend. Can you believe it?
You can please do not stuff money in our pants. Security will be called.
You can stuff money in my pants.
That is, no.
Pockets, not in the pants proper. That's just weird.
No, you don't want to do. I think that's probably going to lead to inappropriate contact, but we'll see. You can also go to patreon.com/baldmove and subbable.com/baldmove if you'd like to throw some money our way in exchange for behind-the-scenes access or custom content recording opportunities. Check our pitch out there. We appreciate everything you guys do to support us.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way we're able to do this is because of your support. So,
do you want to talk about any other projects you're working on right now?
My book. Is that what you're talking about?
All the things.
All the things. I wrote a book for The Walking Dead. Season one, particularly, a survival guide. If you've been familiar with my survival guides that I've written through the years, where I kind of take a humorous look at how the survivors are doing and how they could better survive the apocalypse, I took those and put them together with a recap and review. That's kind of a humorous, wise ass take. You can get it on Amazon.com in the Kindle store. It's DRM free. It's shareable. It's eligible for Kindle Unlimited. Any way you can get it, you can get it.
I have an Amazon verified purchase. I read it. I proofread it.
You did. Amazing. You're one of the editors.
It's a very good book.
Thank you. A little biased, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Rate and review it, by the way.
Shit, I gotta do that.
I still got zero. I still got no ratings. I'm like, I can't rate it myself. That would be gauche.
Am I allowed to do it? Wouldn't it be like your mom kissing your lunch bag when you send it?
Probably, but it's a step above me rate, because I've seen a lot. I was going through some of the self-published books and the highlight, and a surprising amount of authors have one or two reviews of people with the same last name as them or their own name. And I'm like, come on, man.
Good thing we're not married, because some people will never know it's me.
Philip Z, let's get to feedback. You can send us feedback by doing so, sending us an email at ahs@baldmove.com. Or you can go to our live show threads at facebook.com/baldmove.
And if you're a Patreon subscriber, you can watch us live.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the levels of the Patreon. You can actually watch us recording live. Philip Z on Facebook, speaking of the devil, said, can't place Kathy Bates' accent. Sarah DP said, Kathy B's accent is killing me. Rachel H says, I think it's supposed to be Appalachian, but it mostly misses. Amy P says, Kathy B is rocking a bad Clarice from Silence of the Lambs impersonation. Allison SK says, what type of accent is Kathy Bates rocking this season? Every time she opened her mouth, I could not concentrate on anything else but this crazy dialect. I guessed she was doing an elaborate Lorne Michaels from SNL impersonation.
I was focusing so hard on trying to place her accent that every scene she's in, I have no idea what she was talking about.
It's crazy.
After you watch her do it for a couple of takes and you say that's the best you can do, don't you, you know, go back and think, oh, maybe let's give her a Southern accent. Why does she have to be from some strange place that she can't do?
I wonder if it's because she did a Southern accent last year and they were just like, we needed to be different. But Rachel H. has the answer. Kathy Bates confirmed on Twitter that it's a Baltimore accent.
She confirmed on Twitter?
Yes.
What were people saying to her on Twitter?
Baltimore accent? That's not a Baltimore accent, man.
You know what?
I've watched 5 seasons of The Wire.
Your 8-year-old son can't make a video without rewatching it immediately after it's made.
Yeah.
You're telling me that Kathy Bates didn't rewatch any of her stuff and say, oh, maybe I should work on that.
I don't know. I mean,
like, I love
terrible.
Kathy Bates. Okay,
I do too.
I adore her work.
Yeah,
except for this.
And it's not distracting now that I know she. Because now it's like, instead of trying to scratch my head and be like, "What the fuck?" I can just make fun of it. So I'm in a good place with her accent at this point going forward. I hope you all are as well. Anthony Barton Fink Basich said, "She's
it's the guy."
Yeah, wanted to shout out the fact that Jessica Lange was wearing the same outfit and makeup as David Bowie did in the original music video. As a Bowie fan, I really appreciate this. However, I can't ignore the fact that the song was recorded 19 years after this episode is supposed to happen. I could give zero fucks about the timeline on the show.
I am absolutely fine with that. They're doing like a Moulin Rouge, like singing in the rain.
I hope she does the thong song next week. I hope she does some Lord's Royals.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Everything is on the table. Because you know what? Elsa Mars is ahead of her time. And people ripped her off posthumously.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that David Bowie did rip Elsa Mars off. Also, I want to thank Anthony for submitting that, because if I hadn't done a bunch of research, I wouldn't have known that she had been redoing that video.
No, I mean, it's like, you can look it on YouTube. It's other than the tie, it's dead on. John D said, does anyone else have a rough time adjusting to the ensemble all acting together as different characters every season? For whatever reason, it bugs the shit out of me for the first few episodes every time. I also kind of feel like they're trying too hard to give Jessica Lange another award caliber material, getting a little bit more desperate each season. So there's two points here. Do you have a problem shifting gears between characters?
I think after watching the second season that I watched of American Horror Story, you know, when I first saw these characters, I was like, wait a minute, she was this and she was this and he was that. And then it hit me that that's what they were doing. And I was okay with that. So for the first season afterwards, I was confused. But after that, no.
So my thought, because my initial thought was, no, I don't care. I know I have a problem. But a second thought is I do think I carry a little bit of their motivations with them. Like, I can associate Jessica Lange as an evil character. And I think she still is going to be an evil character. But a lot of that is just me overlaying her previous incarnation on it. And Kathy Bates is sinister because she's a slave holder. But I don't confuse their characters. It's almost like whether they're evil or good is what throws me.
I think everyone turns out to be evil almost always in the end. So I think that has never been a problem for me.
So what do you think about the awards baiting of Jessica Lange? I think there's a little pressure there to do that.
I don't know. Maybe the first season, but it seems like this is Jessica Lange's kind of like last big thing she's going to do. And I love Jessica Lange. Hmm. So I don't think it's award baiting. Because there's so many other better actresses out there doing better work. Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that she does continue to be nominated for and winning these awards. I don't think she deserves it, but I don't think she's baiting it.
All right.
She's winning, though, so, I mean, there's that for her.
So's Charlie Sheen. Look what that got him.
He won.
Liam D. said, the season is setting itself up nicely. It worked well as an opener as it introduced both the themes of the show. Outsiders clinging to a lost dream, that the real monsters are not inside the tent, although that's debatable, as well as most of the major players. I imagine the next episode will introduce the final chunk and obvious plot arcs without revealing the motivations of everyone in full, nor giving us the ability to outright predict the course of events.
Who's playing the final chunk?
Michael Chiklis, for one.
His character name is the final chunk.
You know, the thing, the final chunk. He's kind of typecast at this point.
Yeah, he's short and squat, right?
I like the addition of actual disabled individuals who have interviews up on YouTube to give us a nice realism in relation to the freak shows of the past. I'm super excited for the season, as it looks like we'll be going to get a lot more of the dark stuff that works so well in 1 and 2. I will post a link to those interviews on YouTube because they are pretty interesting. And thank you for that, Liam. Paul Soler said, Michael Chiklis is a respectable 5'6", not as Aaron claimed, the feeble 4'1". MC is very sensitive and litigious about his height, so I hope he doesn't find out that Aaron claimed he was playing the world's shortest man, or Aaron could be in for an A.S.S. kicking.
Is this Michael Chiklis writing an email under the false name Paul Soler? No, I'm not buying it, Paul.
So here's what I have to say about that. I actually did some independent research.
Did you?
And guess who was standing next to the world's shortest woman and the world's shortest man picture?
What's up?
Michael Chiklis. So I was wrong. He wasn't 4'1". He's like 2'3". He barely towers.
He's just right above the world's smallest woman.
He's just stands taller than the average New York City fire plug. So, or fire hydrant, if you will.
I will.
And the only way that he looks bigger than that is they use extensive use of camera tricks and angles to make him look like he's bigger.
Like shoot him up so he always looks like way he's towering. Up, oh, way yeah. Up. Like, so like from the feet.
Ryan Murphy digs a hole in the ground to the depth of 6 feet and then points the camera straight up.
Is that how you get him to look like he's 4 feet,
and
though?
He looks like he's 5'6" at that point. Yes. So anyway, come take all of my zero money, Michael. Come bring it on. You're wealthy and famous, and I have my podcast, so you win.
But please support this.
Anthony B. comes back for double dipping. He says, I'm so glad you're covering the show. I wish you'd started back as early as Asylum, which is my favorite season so far, but better now than never. Yeah, buddy. I wanted to mention how much of the style and tone that I really enjoyed about this episode. While this first episode was directed by Murphy himself, I couldn't help but notice the style looked very familiar to the episodes directed by Alfonso
Gomez Rayon.
Yep, Gomez Rayon. He worked with Murphy on Glee, which he admits never watching. I did watch the first two seasons.
I did it. Watch it until it got weird.
All right. Which is about the first two seasons. Uh-huh. And has directed a handful of episodes for the last two seasons of American Horror Story. Scratch that, the first two seasons.
Okay.
Last season, he directed 7 episodes. Shit, I can't rewrite no matter what I'd say. Nope. He's directed all the episodes. His cinematography has this warped look to it, giving us those very dreamlike, surreal visions. Again, Murphy directed this episode, not Ray Hone. But it looks like Murphy has employed a lot of Rayon's techniques. I'm very excited by this, and I'm hoping the other directors follow the same approach. It would certainly give the show a much more unifying tone, adding to the creepiness and dark mood of this premiere. Couldn't agree more. I thought the techniques they used in shooting the twins, shooting their twin speak, shooting the normals versus freaks, I thought it was awesome and did a lot with the art of filmmaking to set the mood and give us a good tone and show without telling us a lot of things were going on subtextually. Boom.
I agree. I don't think I have anything to add to that.
All right.
Doing a great job. He's taking notes and he's learning and he's growing. And that's all you can ask for as a director/writer. He's doing good work.
I think that will do it for the podcast. Again, if you'd like to send us feedback, you can do so at AHS, that's Alpha Hotel Sierra, @baldmove.com. And you can catch us on our live watchings on Facebook.com/baldmove. And look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Bye-bye.